This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 119.
The more that you can get leaders in the organization into the front line, the better they're going to understand the true challenges that they face. And that goes for HRBPs or all the way up through the marketing team, the operations team. You can't understand it until you live it and experience it. Getting out in the unit, having really good, candid conversations with frontline leaders, creating trust so that they'll be honest about what the challenges are. Those are all things that I absolutely believe. HR should be the loudest voice for the frontline leaders because they're not in the room. The frontline leaders aren't in the room. What about the managers? What about the team members? How will they execute this? If you've always got that performance mindset, like at the end of the day, this might be the greatest new product, this great new process we want to do to promote security or whatever. But if it's not executable, if it's not understandable, if it creates too much hardship, they're not going to do it. So just being that voice of the human beings, you know, human resources, being the voice of the human beings, I think is the biggest role that HR can play.
How can HR advocate and support their frontline leaders? Why is it a smart investment to develop your frontline leaders and team members? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field and, most importantly, your career to the next level. Since I've doubled down on my mission to develop the next generation of HR leaders, I've been asked to be a keynote speaker for 7 different internal HR conferences or career weeks of Fortune 500 companies. This has been a big honor and a blast. What am I speaking on? Well, I'm leveraging my 100-plus interviews on the podcast and my 20-plus year career as a talent and HR executive to talk about 3 things. 1, how HR leaders can have more influence and impact in what I call the influence equation. 2, how to future-proof your HR career in the age of AI. And 3, the future trends impacting our field. I love speaking to HR teams and I'm extremely grateful for the opportunities that I've had to date. If you're looking for a speaker for your 2025 HR conferences, career weeks, or other meetings, I'd love to hear from you and talk. And with that, my guest this week is Monica Rothgary. Monica is a sought-after keynote speaker, consultant, and author who's on a mission to help organizations unlock pent-up productivity and growth by empowering their frontline leaders. She's the author of a terrific, practical, and inspirational book called Lessons from the Drive-Thru, and it's a book that every frontline leader should read. And if you're an HR leader with a large frontline workforce, I recommend you pick it up as well. Now, while Monica has always been a friend of the front line, she's not always been a speaker and author. After serving as a lieutenant in the U.S. Army, Monica started a new career as a restaurant general manager for Taco Bell. 5 years later, Monica moved into the training role to support training across all of Taco Bell's restaurants. And this is where Monica and I worked together for 5 years as I started my career at Taco Bell as well. But Monica would go on to be the first woman chief operating officer of KFC, first in Thailand, and then leading 4,000 KFC restaurants in the United States. She's also Yum! Brands' first openly gay executive. Monica is not only a trendsetter, but she's also a people-first leader who has spent her career focused on trying to make an impact on those around her. I love Monica's mission and message and believe we do need to do much more to invest in our frontline team members and leaders. They're often the unsung heroes of our organizations who represent our brands to our customers each and every day. I really enjoyed my conversation with Monica and catching up with her after all these years. And as we discussed, her unique career journey at Yum! Brands, progressing from restaurant manager to training leader to chief operating officer, her mission to elevate, support, and develop frontline leaders across the world, the importance of organizations developing management training programs that emphasize leadership, decision-making, and team empowerment, the critical role of face-to-face training and mentorship for frontline leaders, and how HR leaders can ensure frontline leaders' voices are heard even when they're not in the room. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode as you listen, so drop me a line on LinkedIn or say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with Monica. Monica, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you?
JP, it's so great to reconnect with you. I'm super excited to talk about the future of HR. I love HR.
Yes, and that's how we actually met. We have known each other, we're not even going to say it, a long time. I started my career at Taco Bell and Yum Brands and Irvine, California. And you were in the training or learning department then. I was in the kind of people development, IO psych department or psychology department. Yeah, always really liked each other. And I've just seen your career just skyrocket. And you always had that leadership ability, but you've had this amazing career at Yum Brands. You eventually became the chief operating officer at KFC in the United States, but not before you took a four-year stint as the chief operating officer for KFC Thailand. That is a pretty cool experience. And I want to hear more about that. So tell us more about what it was like to work in Thailand and how you used your frontline leadership experience to really be successful there.
They approached me about the Thailand job, and here's a secret. It was to be the head of HR, go to Thailand and help us become the CPO. I was like, great, solid. Thailand's an amazing company. I'm an HR professional. And then when I got there, they're like, you should think about being the COO, the chief operations officer. I'm like, that's a terrible idea. I have been out of operations for 15, 18 years. The last time I was in operations, I was running a restaurant, a Taco Bell restaurant. And I don't know how to make chicken. I know a lot about tacos and pizza, but I don't know how to make chicken. And I don't speak Thai. The managers and the area coaches don't speak English, and all of the reports are in Thai. So how could I even begin to be successful as a COO? The general manager was a woman named Poom, and she was like, you're going to be fine. And I really need you. So this is the lens I took, JP. I thought to myself, for 20 years, I have been telling operators how to lead. As their HR business partner, I've been telling them, you need to do this. This is how you coach. This is how you build relationships. This is how you do performance management. Could I do it? Now it's my turn. Could I walk the talk that I've been preaching for the last? So that's the lens I took. Because I didn't speak Thai, I had to really do everything through people. So it was a true litmus test in creatively figuring out how to run operations with a people-led perspective. It was hard, but it turned out great. I was very successful there because of, I think, the background I had in HR.
That's such an amazing story. And I love that you kind of leaned into the fact that, like, yeah, we coach, we advise, and we should be good leaders. And then the rubber hits the road and you're like, all right, I can do this. But I'm kind of curious, Monica, tell me more about, like, some of the struggles, because you had to have had some challenges. I mean, there's no way you got there and it was like, it was easy. I mean,
no,
the reports were in Thai. I mean, how do you even know how things are going in the business, let alone be able to make a connection with that manager and the team and all that?
Well, one good thing was they were the worst in the world operationally. I mean, even like Bangalore and Myanmar were worse than Thailand. So there was nowhere to go but up. And the first thing I did was found a couple allies. One was a leader named Anutra, and her English was very good, and she knew finance. She was actually in finance. And so I stole her out of finance. I said, I need you to be my field finance leader. Here's what I'm looking for. What do you see? What are the trends? So I was just all in question asking mode. You look at the reports and you tell me where do we need to focus? So Anutra was a lifesaver, but that was all about like finding the right talent, identifying the skills you need, leveraging strengths, and getting her in the right seat on the bus so that she could help me. The other one was a woman named Kwong. And Kwong was hungry to learn, especially from an American. She's like, how do I get people to do what I need them to do? I said, here's my performance management process. And I boiled it down to like four simple steps. She was taking notes the whole time. She became a student of mine and executed everything I was telling her to do. She started to get momentum. She started to pass audits. And she was the linchpin that then got the whole flywheel turning.
That's such great advice. I mean, when you think about when you are a leader, your success is really dependent on your team. You cannot do it all alone. And you've got to have people understand your philosophy. But also, it sounds like they were empowered to go and get the team. And you're bringing energy and new ideas and saying, hey, let's not be the worst in the world, let's improve. And I think ultimately, didn't you guys end up being one of the best in the world?
We were. We got to the middle of the pack when I left. And probably the thing I'm most proud of is the team I left behind. A year later, they were actually number one in the world. KFC's in 160 countries, so that was quite an accomplishment. Not everything worked. I remember one time I sat down with my region leaders and I said, all right, guys, we're going to work on the strategy for next year. What do you guys think we should work on? Chirp, 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 silence. And one of the guys goes, that's your job. I was like, you're right. It is my job. And the reason you have to have an American come in and run your country is because none of you know how to do it. Tomorrow, I'm going to have a meeting, and anybody who wants to learn how to create strategy for next year, you can come to this meeting. Two people came, but those were the ones I worked with, and both of those got developed to become directors eventually. Thai's leading Thailand, right? So not everything worked, but the things that did work, we built on, and yeah, we ended up doing very well. It was game-changing, though. I mean, culturally, I could tell stories for days.
I bet you could, and that's an impressive run. I mean, I think for people who are listening, United States and say KFC, well, that may not be a power brand here. Outside of the U.S. and Asian cultures especially, I mean, KFC is a premier brand, right, and drives a lot of growth there. And so it's in 160 countries.
I was a rock star. Like, there's two brands in Thailand, Apple and KFC. And if I went somewhere with my shirt, my logo shirt on, people were lining up like, KFC, take selfie. Take selfie, Naka. I put it on Facebook. I was on so many Thai people's Facebook pages, it was ridiculous because, I was like a rock star brand. They love KFC there, which is sadly a little bit different here.
Yeah, and well, and I'm since you are such a rock star, it's great to have in our podcast. I appreciate you doing that. And you've come back, you've since now moved on and left KFC and Yum Brands, and you've gone out on your own and you've written a book really about just the passion you have for frontline leaders. And I love the title. It's called Lessons from the Drive-Thru. Tell us more about why you wrote the book, Monica, and who you wrote the book for.
I started as a restaurant manager. I did that job for 5 years, which is a long, long time. And I struggled. It was the hardest. I was in the Army, JP. I was an officer in the Army. And being a manager for Taco Bell was harder than being in the Army. I told myself, if I ever manage to get promoted, I'm going to spend my career trying to help frontline leaders not struggle the way I did. The book is a continuation of that promise. It is for frontline leaders, whether it's retail or C-store or hospitality or restaurant. First of all, you're not alone. The struggles you're having, you're not alone. And number two, you have so much power and potential to change people's lives. You're not just a Taco Bell restaurant manager. You're a leader of 30 to 40 people running a multi-million dollar business. And then here's some of the things that I struggled with. Maybe try this instead, so that you don't have to struggle the way I did. That's who I wrote it for and why. The other benefit that I hope comes out of it, though, is twofold. One, I hope that executives, senior leaders start to recognize that in this market today, if you're not leveraging your frontline leaders to grow your business, you're missing a huge opportunity. And we can talk more about that later. But the other one, and the last one is that we start to shift people's mindset, the society's mindset about the industry. These are passionate people. They work hard. They're professionals. They care deeply about their businesses. It's time to stop being the butt of late night joke.
Couldn't agree more. And it's one reason why I was excited to see you going this way, following your passion, but writing this book, because I think we sometimes, to your point, don't really understand how hard our frontline teams work. And I know that if you are an HR leader and you have frontline teams, you know this. But if you don't, maybe you work in a different industry, we forget how hard these managers work and how the impact they can have on lives. And customers are demanding and not always very, not very nice to people who are really trying really hard. And there's a lot on these plates. You have to be operationally efficient. You have to understand the business and the metrics. I mean, they're basically running for a small restaurant. A Chick-fil-A, I heard, is like doing like $10 million a year at times or more, but Taco Bell at our back in the day was around $2 million a year. But you're running a $2 million business with 30 or 40 employees, and you're probably doing, I don't know how many transactions a day. These are difficult jobs that people need to understand, and they don't get a lot of support. And we need to do a better job supporting them and helping build that pipeline. So it's just great that you wrote the book, and we can take the moment to really bring this message home for people.
Yeah. You sound like you've been there. Did you work frontline ever?
Hey everyone, after a quick break, we'll be right back to our conversation with Monica. I'm excited to let you know that I've recently put together a succession planning playbook. that you can download for free at futureofhr.com. And whether you want to assess your current approach to succession planning or you're building your leadership development strategy from scratch, this playbook offers an actionable framework designed to help you understand what great succession planning looks like. So go to futureofhr.com and download the succession planning playbook today. Okay, so here, the fun fact for the podcast listeners, my only frontline experience is I ran a frozen margarita business in grad school. So, which sounds very glamorous, except for the fact that I was the one that had to, these 60-gallon drums filled full of water from a hose, pour in all the margarita mix and all the alcohol, and then we had to like mix it up. And when sometimes we didn't have, we would use a CO2 tank to do that. The CO2 tank was broken. I had to take these 60-gallon drums that weighed probably 600 pounds, I don't know, and roll them around on the ground to try to mix up the margarita mix that we were then going to sell at these like massive concerts. So it was, it was tough, but it was a little more fun in some areas, but I was not drinking, just so everyone knows. I just worked. The drinks weren't that good, but that was my frontline experience. And then, you know, like growing up, I had gumball machines. So my dad was in the gumball machine business. So I would go into stores when I was 15, 16 years old and say, can I put a gumball machine in your pizza place?
Yeah.
And so I had a lot of appreciation for what that was like and realized the people who had a small business really had bought that job and what they had to deal with every day. So, and then of course was at Taco Bell for 5 years, which was instrumental in my career, my growth. And so, yeah, I've definitely got a soft spot for frontline leadership.
I love the gumball machine and the margarita mix. That's awesome.
Some fun facts. In your experience, what sets a great frontline leader apart from maybe a more average one?
Every organization has it. This top echelon, 1-2%, they blow sales away. They have an awesome team. So it's right there. You can study it. And time again, it's that they do what's theirs to do. The frontline leader that understands what their role truly is are the ones that excel. So what I mean is, what I observe in organizations typically is everyone does the job of the person underneath them. Like in a restaurant, for example, a shift manager is just a team member with keys. They know how to do all the team member jobs. They can come in and open the restaurant. They don't really lead. And then the restaurant manager is like a really, really good shift manager. Everything gets done in the store, all the tasks, but no one's running the restaurant. And then your area coaches are running around trying to be restaurant managers to 7 or 10 restaurants. The ones that are really, really effective understand that their role is to run the restaurant, to lead the team, not to do the job of the shift managers. So they're really good at building self-sufficient teams. They're really good at selection, development. They understand and care about their teams deeply. Once that team is self-sufficient and they don't need the manager to solve every little problem, then the manager can think about, how do you grow sales? How do I maximize efficiency and productivity?
That happens even in corporate world, where sometimes people are doing someone else's job below them versus empowering or helping people to kind of step up and have more accountability.
I see it all the time. Even me, when I was first COO for KFC, they brought me a stack of papers for last week's report. I said, what am I supposed to do with this? They said, well, the last guy, he would go through it and then he would make phone calls. Like, guys, if I'm worried about last week, who's worrying about next year and the year after that and the year after that? We have vice presidents of operations to worry about last week. Now, that's not to say I didn't care about results. Of course, I did quarterly business reviews, but daily calls to ask about why your speed of service is bad is not me doing what's mine to do. So you're right. It happens at every level in every organization.
Yeah. And I think saying that, what really kind of came to my mind was, how do you define your job? Like, how do you define the value you're offering to your team, to the organization? And if you're sitting there thinking, my job is to make sure that we get orders out within 3 minutes, and, you know, and you're hustling and you're now being the expediter. I'm sorry, we're using a lot of fast food language here, people. But, you know, that's not your job. Your job is actually to see the flow, understand the whole thing, like build the capability of the team. And so what you're saying is, the best frontline managers were really saying, how do I build my team so I can elevate and see the whole big picture? Like you said, 100%. See the next 2 years. And I think that's really a challenge for all of us as leaders, is to step back and say, hey, how do we add value? And where can we add our team to add more value? And I think that's critical. Do you see the role of frontline leaders evolving over the years? I mean, do you see it changing in the future? What are some of the trends happening now? Because I'm not as close to what is going on in that industry.
It's shockingly the same as it was 30 years ago, despite the advent of technology and robotics. And I think it's going to dramatically change because of labor, because of the cost of labor and the availability of labor. There's like 8 million open jobs in the country right now. I heard that that's a SHRM stat. So there's just not people out there. Plus, you know, $20 an hour, it's getting. So I can imagine a day when a restaurant, a quick service restaurant or a C-store, you see it already, self-serve. It's all self-serve. You go to the airport, you grab a bottle of water. You don't even talk to someone. You walk in, you scan your own stuff and you walk out. So what you'll need is you'll need a few people who are technically able to maintain the equipment, whether it's robotics to package French fries or make sandwiches or AI at the drive-thru. Somebody's going to have to like maintain that within. So you'll have some technical people. So I think the role of frontline leader is going to be still coaching, but much more around driving the business result and managing a bigger picture versus like muscling through as many orders as you can so that you can get as many cars as you can.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I think about if we start to automate everything, everything is self-serve and there's no human touch. When I think about growing same store sales and people kind of coming back to someplace, I mean, you can do that for a while where you have like an airport, there's a lot of traffic, people are coming in, they're captive, there's no choice. But if I'm making a choice to go to a restaurant or go to a certain Starbucks or go to wherever I'm going to go, it is nice when they know you. It's nice when you feel like you see the same team and you feel like they care. What are your thoughts on the role of coaching and mentoring? We've talked a lot about how do you develop people. So how does that happen and how do organizations implement these practices, especially for frontline or field teams?
Obviously, the biggest problem when you are trying to develop or coach or mentor frontline leaders is the number of them. Your executive team is 6 to 10 people. It's easy to hire a coach for each one of them. But when you're talking 600 managers out there running your 7-Elevens or your car wash or your doggy daycare, whatever it is, right? You don't have a lot of money to invest in each one of them. So I think peer-to-peer mentoring is a big one. And I talk about that in my book. I always saw my peers when I was a restaurant manager as competition. And the company kind of fostered that. One person was going to win. It was almost like Survivor. When I learned that my peers they'd seen problems I hadn't seen and solved things I hadn't solved, when I saw that they could be allies and we could help each other, we both got ahead faster. So I think optimizing how you position your frontline teams with each other is a starting point. And then the next one is probably making sure that your above restaurant leaders, their coaches, know something about coaching, truly. And then it goes right back to what I was saying, making sure that the right people, that everyone's doing what is their job and not the job of the person underneath them. If that happens, then I think you can unlock enough time and resources for good development, good coaching. Because these frontline leaders, there's so much they don't know. There is so much they don't know. We take for granted, this is a big mistake companies make. We take for granted, we think they know basic fundamental stuff. I asked 10 area coaches, so that district managers, hey, what are 10 things you want frontline leaders to know? Brand new, in position. The first thing they said, without even missing a beat, 3 of them blurted out, don't sleep with the team. Right. It's shocking because you're like, well, isn't that kind of like no brainer? It's not. They have no idea that dating someone on their team is a bad idea. They're like, well, I can be fair. I treat everybody fairly. They don't know because they haven't seen it. And then it went from there. I mean, the other 10 things were similar. Like, don't yell at your team. Don't talk bad about the company in front of your team. They were so fundamental that I was just kind of awestruck by it. Like, wow, we are starting at level 9 and we need to start at level 1. And remember, these guys have no experience. Their role model was the manager before them who had no experience.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. And I think, like I said, the other point you're saying, and in my experience, one thing that's amazing about these frontline roles, whether it's a restaurant company or retail, is that you can start as the hourly team member and move up to be a general manager, move up to be an area leader, to a VP of operations, all the way up. That's the power of these jobs. But that only comes if you have the right role models in the organizations helping to train and give these people education that they might need or may not have had in other places. And you've got great role models, that happens. So what do you think about this point, Monica? What else are people doing? What are the other common mistakes organizations make when they're investing or not investing in frontline leaders, and how can we avoid them?
Well, like I said, I think one is not putting any developmental money aside for these folks. I think a lot's going into, and no disrespect to folks that have the learning management platforms, I think there's certainly a place for them. But at the end of the day, folks need, I believe, face-to-face training on how do you have a difficult conversation? How do you do performance management? You can read that in a book, but gosh, these guys don't even read. Here's an example. Or just a fun fact. It wasn't uncommon. I would go into restaurants at KFC and I would look on their computers in the back and there would be 10,000 unread emails. Who are those from? Well, they were from us, the people in HR and operations, sending all kinds of great information that they need to know, and they're not even open. So a big mistake companies make is thinking that they're getting information, training, coaching to their employees, their frontline leaders, but in fact, they're probably not. Finding out how they absorb information, how they digest it, getting it to them just in time, in the amount of data and information they can take, that's an unlock. And I think that's a mistake. Whoever figures that out is gets ahead in the game.
Yeah, that's a really important point. I mean, there's so many different priorities competing. And I think a lot of times, if we expect that a frontline leader, a manager, is spending his time on the computer, then they're not watching what's actually happening around the operations with the customers, with the team. That's a problem. And so I think they have a balance because I'm sure a lot of the area leaders are like, hey, why aren't you checking your emails and you missed this? Yep. Yet, or I'm on conference calls. And I've heard that even Dick's Sporting Goods, people are like, hey, we're on these conference calls. And so it was insane because everyone wanted to hear and get feedback from the store managers. But the store managers, they're getting that from five or six departments. Right. And I think Dick's Sporting Goods did a nice job of like really funneling that information. There's only certain times you could talk to the store managers. You know, we really kind of set really good limits, but there's a lot of competing priorities. And so to your point of assuming that you sent an email, it's going to make an impact, it's probably not. And they're probably going to happen more from a conversation from their area leader. Those types of things are going to make a bigger impact.
Yeah.
What are some ways that we shouldn't be investing though, or we should be trying to help build the capability of frontline leaders, managers, all the way down to shift supervisors, et cetera?
We have to make sure that the spans are right, that the district managers have small enough spans that they can visit and spend time with their frontline leaders, because there's nothing short of that. A good mentor, a good coach is going to be there when you need them. If the spans get too big, I do happen to think in restaurant, that's probably 6 to 8. You start to get above that, or your geography gets too big, and then you're not seeing those leaders often enough. I think a mistake that companies make is they don't give new leaders enough time or labor dollars, resources. Labor ends up being a flat percentage across the company, and you've got your tenured, experienced frontline leader who can run the place with their eyes closed, tenured team, self-sufficient, and you got your new leader who could use more resources, hire more people to have more time to spend with them. That's an easy, smart way to empower and help, especially newer frontline leaders. Just putting aside resources to get them together and invest in them. Because I think some of the LMS stuff that they get, back of house or whatever, it's good. It's good content. It's great. But they're just clicking through it. I've seen them. I've watched them. And they're not really engaging with it the way they should. Those would be a few ideas.
Yeah, and I think you're building on that. When you talked about the labor dollars and the pressure you can be under, because in some ways there are some organizations, and I think we're getting a lot more sophisticated now where we can understand the different types of stores, which ones are more complex, which ones have higher turnover. But one thing I have seen organizations make mistakes on is we put a leader in a role. So we've had a store or a district and it turns over. It's a really tough district, but we don't know why. And we blame the person. It's like attribution error. At times 1,000, like, oh, that person was a bad leader and we turn them out. But the reality is when you get that promotion and go into a new store or district, it's because someone failed before or it was challenging, right? It wouldn't be open if there wasn't a challenge there. So what I think organizations have to start to think about and the HR teams need to think through with their leaders is saying, hey, what makes this district challenging? How do we give this person more support, give them more time, more resources, more labor dollars to make the investment to turn this thing around? And what I've seen good enlightened district managers do, and they get it, but when they don't, we just go in the same cycle of like in 6 months or a year, we're going to fire this person or move them out. And you're like, that person was a star before, now they're not. Like, what happens? So we kind of forget that it's a big learning curve, especially if you're new in a store. The other thing I was thinking about, Monica, is what can HR professionals do and how can they work with their senior leadership to really secure the buy-in, the resources for that frontline leadership development initiatives?
Not to go old school, but the more that you can get leaders in the organization into the front line, the better they're going to understand the true challenges that they face. And that goes for HRBPs or all the way up through the marketing team, the operations team. You can't understand it until you live it and experience it. Getting out in the unit, having really good, candid conversations with frontline leaders, creating trust so that they'll be honest about what the challenges are. Those are all things that I absolutely believe HR should be the loudest voice for the frontline leaders, because they're not in the room. The frontline leaders aren't in the room. What about the managers? What about the team members? How will they execute this? If you've always got that performance mindset, like at the end of the day, this might be the greatest new product, this great new process we want to do to promote security or whatever. But if it's not executable, if it's not understandable, if it creates too much hardship, they're not going to do it. So just being that voice of the human beings, you know, human resources, being the voice of the human beings, I think is the biggest role that HR can play. And then the second one is figuring out how to get the right information, the right content, the right skill building at the right time to those leaders. And constantly reminding people, the executive team, that it's a continuum. Turnover's high, right? We can't make assumptions that they know how to handle different situations, whether it's a difficult customer or an employee or a harassment issue or whatever, all of the things that they face right head on, with oftentimes without the training, development, experience to know how to handle it. And then just making sure at that annual time when you set aside money that we don't end with the frontline team, we start with them. How do we invest in them? Whether we bring them all together, whether we provide some coaching or training or online learning, so that they're not the last we think about, but rather the first we think about.
Yeah, really being empathetic, understanding the experience. But then I think what you're saying is get as many people into those frontline positions or experiences or the stores or whatever they are, making sure people have experienced that, especially in the corporate perspective. And I think a lot of corporations have done that where they have those, you go out for a 2-day or a week.
Yeah.
Those are great. But I think just going out more and more often and really just getting close to what's really happening, I think that really helps you understand, hey, how can we make this better for our frontline leaders, right? Because like we said, they've got tough jobs. These are not easy.
And then, of course, they could just give them my book.
Absolutely. Give them your book. Bring you in. And
let them through the drive-through. It's everything you need to know about how to, all the things not to do.
Well, they should give them their book. I think it's great because it's really cool to have a book that's written for them. And so I think that's what's powerful. Monica, last question for you. What is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
Maximizing human capital. And I know that sounds like kind of cliche, but everyone's talking about, I went to a conference last week and there were 40 workshops on AI and how AI is changing the game. So what role are people going to play? And what skills do those people need to have? And how do we transition the current workforce to have the skills they are going to need to adapt to this new environment? That is going to be the greatest challenge for the human resource function probably in the last 20 years.
I think you're right. Maximizing human capital. Monica, thank you so much for being on the podcast. The book is Lessons from the Drive-Thru. Everyone needs to go out and read it and buy it.
Thanks, JP. Appreciate you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Thanks again to Monica for sharing her passion around investing in and growing frontline leaders. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. If you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, be sure to subscribe, share our podcast with at least one other person, or even better, leave a review on Apple or Spotify podcasts. This helps us to grow the podcast and helps with our mission of inspiring the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with Jackson Lynch. Jackson is an EDP and Chief Human Resources Officer at Sonova, and he's an experienced and strategic HR leader, having been a CHRO at multiple public and private companies. In his spare time, Jackson runs the popular Talent Sherpa newsletter,
which offers insights and actionable strategies for human capital management for senior business leaders. Definitely check that out, and don't miss my conversation with Jackson. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.